Let's do some review.
I had thought it was getting easier, and I was wrong.
Some of it I had to just say, I don't know what's going on. So we'll, maybe we can work together at a couple of points. But what we did last time was the precession of equinox. Now, that didn't make sense. Don't worry about it. The point is simply that Jung tried to understand history in terms of large thematic movements. Again, that's really a little bit outside our scope, but that idea came up in this. That's why I referred to it. So we just see the seeds of his ideas. We talked about the flow from the valley to the mountain on 315, which I thought was important because we try to start with individual experience and find the spirit in it, rather than start with the experience and move to individual experience. You just look at the stone at the church. Love God, love each other, go tell the world. See, it's top down, the stone in front of the church. And Jung is saying, no, you start at the bottom and you move up. We talked about Philemon and Baucis, the two Greek figures that hosted the gods, how important that was for Jung's life. We talked about Philemon as the serpent. We'll come back to that. We talked that Philemon is not Christ because Christ evokes an idealization and Philemon doesn't want disciples. Big difference. Doesn't want disciples.
Disciples.
Yeah, he wants you to look inside, and Jung feels the way Christianity has worked is we look outside for our guidance. Now, then we ended up on page 316, right before his story, initial 152. So if you feel okay with what we've done, we'll press on. Why are you laughing, O Philemon? I cannot fathom you, but do I not see the blue air of your garden? Now, I think the blue air is the key image here. What happy shades surround you? Does the sun hatch blue midday specters around you? That blue air would be a reference to the spirit. Philemon is an image of the spirit. It's complicated because it certainly looks like he says several contradictory things, but I think the overall point is the spirit pulls you away from experience.
He talks about that blue shade being Christ also, right?
Same idea. Christ as spirit. And what he's trying to define is a spirit that starts in the earth, with the body, emotional experience.
He meaning Philemon?
Jung, really. And Philemon is one component of that. And he's flopping around trying to understand how all these pieces fit together. That's how I understand this. Philemon is one component. And at times he's a snake, which means that the spirit, which we just had in the previous page, which sounds just the opposite to blue light, but the spirit can activate instinct. And that's, in that sense, it's a snake. But that is cold. Remember Christiana Morgan, those of you who did the vision seminar, she was inundated with eroticism, which you think, well, that's fire. Yes, it's hot, but it's not warm.
Say that again. The spirit can activate
instinct.
Okay.
And desire. If it wants to get its message across, it can create an instinctual entanglement, like Jung is involved in. So he's also working on himself here. And you think, well, but all that instinctual entanglement, isn't that fire? Yes, but it's a fire that burns. It's not a fire that warms. So that's why Philemon can be snake and blue light, and the common denominator between both of those is no human warmth. I mean, think of promiscuous people. They don't have relationships. The warmth is missing.
So blue light is a is an aspect of this inhuman coldness.
Well, I put it differently, that the nature of wisdom is that it's transcendental. And it's the nature of wisdom that it pulls you out of the chaos of experience.
So,
you know, fools rush in where wise men never tread, kind of idea.
But also Philemon is love. They made a big issue of that. So he's warmth in that respect.
But is it human love?
Pardon me?
Is it human love?
Well, it was warm, whatever it was.
Where was that?
Well, what we've been through with Philemon is love. You're the lover. He loves. The lover of one's own soul. The lover of the soul.
Yeah, see, that's not human.
And what is your idea behind what you say that it's not human?
He's going to be looking for a larger context to put Philemon in. So that Philemon is one ingredient tempered by other ingredients, which makes a human being. But he doesn't know that yet. You know, just jumping ahead to the next italicized, we'll go through more in this paragraph, but the next set of italicized lines, my street leads to the valley where men live, and Philemon is a garden of blue air. That's the juxtaposition that he's working with. Now, he's going to come to the point, these aren't contradictions, but for the moment, they seem that way.
Where are we exactly?
316, where it says historiated initial 152 on the right hand.
Okay.
And then below that, there's a passage, O Master of the Garden.
In italics.
Mm-hmm. I see your dark tree from afar in the shimmering sun. My street leads to the valleys where men live. And he just said, your domain is the garden of blue air. So he's contrasting the two.
Yeah, I kind of saw this as, even though Philemon might be the positive side of the self, if you become inflated with that, it's still going to be a problem.
Yes, exactly.
You know, people think of being inflated with the devil, or that's not a devil's being a problem, but being inflated by the positive side of the self is also a problem. It's having relationship to this without becoming positive.
Yeah. And it produces aloofness. So, you know, if you think you're wise, you may come into a situation that you'd really like to get involved in, but you say, oh, well, I'm above that. And the fact is, your eros wants to be there, namely in a relationship. Wisdom, pure wisdom, would pull you out of it. So that's what he's working with now, this attempt to find a greater whole into which these pieces will fit. Because Philemon is a teacher and friend of the dead. Remember the ancestors. So what Philemon is the understanding of truths that have been passed down to us, but not necessarily the living of those truths. He's got it in his mind. But he doesn't have it as a whole. Does this make sense? I really think the best explanation is fools rush in where wise men never tread. That's exactly what this is talking about. Wisdom, so-called, can keep you out of messes in life, but they may be exactly the messes you need. And the truths that wisdom communicates are, in the best sense, the past asking for reinterpretation, that can also simply be the past that judges the correct moment wrongly because its truths, as they were interpreted in the past, no longer apply. The warrior as an ideal is a past truth. The warrior as an ideal in a nuclear age is very dangerous. The inner warrior is a very healthy attitude. I will fight within myself for my truth. And so, see how these things can be taken out of context. And when they are, they pull you out of life. And here, he's just getting the parts. He doesn't yet see the whole.
What's a little misleading, I find, as I read it, is that Jung approaches Philemon with such warmth himself. The I narrator here is imbuing him with more warmth than we're saying he has, and projecting kind of a warmth onto him, at least initially, in this whole Philemon.
Well, the irony here is everything I've said is wrong. Because Philemon as an ingredient does enhance warmth.
Then what are you saying?
That as a single point of view, he's cold. As a member of the inner team, he increases emotional depth. That's why Jung is so moved by him, and why Jung talked to him his whole life. But Jung then had to apply the human element.
Archetype, right?
He's an archetype. That's a good way to put it. A very important archetype as an ingredient in the whole with which we establish a relationship essential to the deep living of life, but taken alone can pull you out of life. That's how I understand it. That's how I look at the contrast between the valleys where men live and the blue air of a garden.
I wrote, warrior is a past truth.
Yeah.
What you said?
Yeah.
In the outer world?
Yeah. That, you know, in Greek, or even up to what? World War II, I guess. That warrior attitude was important, but now it's very dangerous because we live in such proximity and we have the nuclear danger. So the idealization of the warrior starts to become dangerous.
So that would include John Wayne.
That would include John Wayne. And, excuse me, Mitt Romney.
But could we say, is it actually the spirit itself that pulls one out of life, or one's reaction to it?
Well, his unconscious relationship to it.
Okay.
Unthinking.
Okay, that makes a lot more sense.
Just getting swept up by it. Mm-hmm. Hey, don't you know people who go around acting as if they're above everything? Mm-hmm. That's it.
Yeah, we're
not. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As if he knows what a woman feels like.
Right, exactly.
Well,
that's
God,
that's perfect.
For what God wants.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, so glad he knows, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. In a way, there's a certain truth to that. But take it on a much different level. And when you identify with it and you throw it down from your ivory tower, it's destructive to life. Perfect example. That's a man possessed by the Spirit with no human dimension to it. And still apparently too stupid to evaluate the reaction.
Right. Yeah.
It doesn't matter what the reactions are if you're speaking for God.
Exactly.
Right.
God is always right.
All of those people are wrong. It doesn't matter if everybody's speaking for God.
You have spoken a very important truth. You see, there's no dialogue anymore.
What I had written is when we were talking about the change of the God image,
yeah,
hosting God instead of consuming Him, and carrying water instead of swimming or being immersed in. So that's the difference of how you relate to God.
Yeah. What we're going to come to now is that Jung will soon be redefining what he considers sacred, and Philemon will be one aspect of that, namely that we have to take responsibility for developing our own truth, and sharing that truth is the religious life. But done from a human perspective. That's why it's called magic, magic, war, and religion, because all of this is going to start having religious implications.
It's not just sharing it, it's how we share it.
Yeah.
Murdoch would be sharing it.
Sharing it in an attitude of dialogue. Very important. That's the shift from 3 to 4, which we'll get to. Three imposes, dictates from on high, and 4 says, well, how do you feel about that? I mean, listen to how you feel about that. Maybe I need to reevaluate what I just said. Okay, well, sort of on the religion theme, bottom of that page, killing off would-be prophets is a gain for the people. Because Philemon stands against idealizing. And we got another, we didn't talk about these pictures. We did talk about this one, didn't we, last time? But we didn't talk about this one. That's Historian Initial 153. O Master of the Gardens, I see your dark tree from afar in the shimmering sun. My street leads towards the valley where men live.
I wrote to myself here that we talked about the last historiated initial as being sort of a beauty of symmetry.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is too, but then the fourth element sort of moves outward.
Yeah. And
entwined snakes.
Mm-hmm.
I guess a sort of dynamism from the healing wisdom of the earth, perhaps.
Yes, absolutely. See, this is that's the balance of wisdom. And this is the impetus of life. Okay. Anything else you want to say about that? Wait, let's go back. Well, keep the lights off because we'll come to another image very shortly. Just nothing new. The last couple of sentences on the first paragraph on the left column of 317. So cover the lights and remain silent so that the night will become dark and noiseless. The sun rises without our help. Only he who knows the darkest error knows what light is. So find your own light. Don't look outside.
And is he indicating here that the way to do that is to find your darkness, too?
You
can't do that in the midday sun.
Right.
Which is, okay.
Yeah, all of that is that we have to be able to endure our emptiness and our pain and our depression and our darkness. That's the portal to the Spirit. And I think that humanizes you so that when the Spirit does speak, you're more of a human being with it.
Less chance of getting taken over by the archetype.
Yes. You know that, I don't know, you know this, I think she's African, but she lives in England, singer Sade. She has a line in one of her songs, tenderness comes from pain. So that is the tenderness that's generated through life's difficulties that keeps us human and able to become wise without becoming aloof. O Master of the Garden, your magical grove shown to me from afar, I venerate your deceptive mantle, you Father of all will-o'-the-wisps. And then this is the image. So will-o'-wisps, I think, originally referred to light on bogs from the methane that would ignite, and you would just see little flickering lights, so that the, as I understand this anyway, what he's saying is pure wisdom leads to a flickering existence. You don't have substance. You've got insight, flashes of insight, but you're not grounded.
Pure wisdom leads to what?
Well, will-o'-the-wisp in the sense of ungrounded, flickering.
Short-lived life.
Well,
of air, I mean gas.
Yeah, short insights of short value.
Disparages
his wisdom in a way. Yes, I think he's wrestling with both sides and trying to find how can I bring the best out of Philemon. Because Philemon in and of himself, as Jane says, is an archetype. And it can take you over or inflate you, but with the right attitude, it deepens your life. We know that now. Jung didn't know that then. This is what he's working out.
So the flickers of light or wisdom or insight, they come up and then sometimes they'll fall back and
right.
They don't get them.
Right, exactly.
And then they come back again.
Right.
Again.
And they're never attached to the ego, you might say.
Right.
They're never grounded.
Right.
Right.
Oh, that's what you mean by not grounded. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, or not.
I don't understand that.
Well, like maybe the like a fad comes and goes.
Okay. Or you don't manifest it meaningfully in your life. You just, it's a thing in your head. How'd you say that?
Yes, that, and if you do manifest it, it's not something that lasts.
Not manifested properly.
Or not manifested with continuity.
My daughter calls shallow depth.
Shallow depth, yeah. That's a good word for it.
Well, if you really do integrate the depth, then you live it.
Then it's different. Mm-hmm. Then he becomes your guide.
think the four, I mean, at the top there, you know, you have the three circles. Mm-hmm. Philemon is the fourth. So mm-hmm. he's part of this fourness.
Right.
He's also standing
that's
on
very important.
Like a mosque.
That's very
which
important.
I think that's kind of significant.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And isn't this tree on the right, on our right, the same tree that we saw a few images back with the moon
sure
behind
looks like it?
It.
Should I go back?
The plasma tree.
Mm-hmm, the plasma tree.
We talked about plasma being the fourth state of matter, the most common state, and yet the last one to be identified.
Do you remember how far back it was?
It's been at least a month ago. I'm sorry.
That would be like one picture, probably.
Yeah.
Is that it?
No, keep going.
Getting close.
There it is. Isn't that the same tree? It looks like
uh-huh.
the same tree to me.
Mm-hmm. And then on the left, it looked like date palms.
It did to me, too. Full
yes.
of dates.
Mm-hmm. Full of nourishment.
Full of fruit. Yeah. Full of fruits.
So in a sense, Philemon is kind of a poseur. He's a projection of Jung's onto this construct that he's.
I wouldn't say that. I think he is the nature of any unconscious content, but it's ambivalent. And with a unaware attitude towards it, you're swept up by it, and you live out the destructive side. With an awareness to it, you are enriched. And for us, that's second nature. But Jung didn't know that yet. So he's thrashing this out, first one side, then the other.
And just look at Nietzsche, what happened to him.
Yeah, Nietzsche would be a perfect example of a man carried away by Philemon.
Above it all.
Profoundly, profoundly wise. Mm-hmm. He predicted history for 100 years, yet his life was pathetic. I mean, he wouldn't even be a good roommate.
That's the thing, Philemon, you sort of stand against idealization.
Yeah.
And yet that archetype draws you in and what else do you
do? Well, that's what you project when you idealize.
I mean, that's a teaching. Right? Doing his increment with his philosophy with his.
Too much information.
Try me again, Jim. I'm not sure.
Philemon's actually against idealizing.
Right.
But if you become that artist, you idealize your own.
Or you want to be idealized.
Or you want to be idealized.
Yes.
Are you saying that Zarathustra and Philemon are the same archetype?
Well, they're
similar.
Cuts off the same archetype, I think, yeah. Probably Zarathustra was so extreme because Nietzsche was so weak in the human sphere. Jung already has got a couple of kids and he's, you know, he's relating to the world, but still schooling on him. Yeah, and so it's not as extreme, but it's got the same dangers.
The Philemon, like Nietzsche, does not want followers. Nietzsche wanted followers.
He did?
Well, Zarathustra wanted followers. Zarathustra, early on in his dialogue, he goes down to the village where he's threatened with death, and then he retreats and he decides what he needs as followers, and then he begins all his speeches.
That's true. Yeah, that's a good point. But I bet you could find texts in there where he says just the opposite. Get away from me. Because he was so split.
And in that sense, he shares a position with Christ and with Muhammad.
Yeah, yeah.
With the one follows.
Yeah. Well, I think part of the problem is he's so extreme in everything he says. It's just so...
And he's so much older than Philemon. Philemon is Greek, right?
Yes.
We've already seen a lot of development in the consciousness of the world by that time, where Zarathustra is a little bit older.
Yeah, I guess he is older. Yeah.
I don't know how far back.
800, I think, B.C.
Okay.
I think. Does that sound right, Carol?
Zarathustra is based on the Zoroaster?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Who was the figure... Was that his name in the
Zoroaster? Zoroaster, yeah. Or Zarathustra, the two different words in two different... One's Persian, one's Greek.
I wonder why he's standing on that monster.
I've been asking myself the same question.
Is it because he's above it? Do you think he's above them all? Or is it because...
That just shows it's his temple, I think. He's used that device before where... The figure stands on the thing that stands for it, that they stand for.
Yeah, exactly.
And here he carries the light of the individual, it seems to me. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We'll see pretty soon that Jung is just dismissing the church.
I think it said in here that he's wearing chainmail, and you can kind of see that in his arm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Which is supposedly impenetrable.
You will see Jung is pretty much writing the church out of existence.
And below Philemon's temple, there's a little image of the opposite. United, there's fire and there's water.
Oh, I see, underneath it.
Yeah, underneath it, there's fire and there's water. The two cones again,
mm-hmm.
that you spoke of.
Right.
And the moon underneath.
And the moon, and then the symbol for the earth in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So it's some sort of feminine energy is uniting those opposites, it seems, because of the earth and the moon being in the center.
And then on either side, it appears to be a fish to me with a very large eye.
Yeah, they do look like fish.
Mm-hmm.
And then the snake is what totally seems totally manifest.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's on the right side of the image.
Mm-hmm. And the tree is growing very weakly, but look at the palms on the left.
You find the tree weak?
This
behind
right tree?
The snake?
Yeah, don't you
really?
Think?
No.
I think that's the plasma tree. Speaks to that.
But there's not nearly as much growth.
Right, it's just a different type of tree.
Oh, it's a type of tree.
Mm-hmm.
But look how vigorous the branches are. Mm-hmm. All the growth of it comes up on top of that type
that's
of tree. I don't know what it is. Mm-hmm. Does anybody know what it's supposed to be?
What's on the left don't have any branches coming out.
Here?
It's a palm.
So these are palm trees.
Like palms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Big palm.
Something like a baobab tree.
Yeah.
Oh, you think it's a
big one? Like a tree in Africa would grow that way. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because
it looks like an African
plant. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
What I can't get away from is Philemon's expression. He's looking out at you. With a coldness, with a sternness,
mm-hmm.
with almost a hostility,
yeah.
possibly a fear from his overhanging brows,
mm-hmm.
back in his cave. So that would speak to this idea that he's aloof and
mm-hmm.
cold, and he does not seem like the friendly, wise old man that we might ideally like.
Mm-hmm.
Not the father, other forms of the most complete wise old man.
And I guess if Jung's going to move away from the church, he's got to move away from that picture of wisdom as warm and friendly and wise old man.
Yeah, warm and fuzzy.
I think it's curious he seems to be dressed in medieval clothing.
There was something on PBS about the Viking sword, and it was talking about the Viking sword being the only thing that could cut through the chainmail, and they didn't, in Europe, some of the Vikings had these swords, but they didn't have the technology to make them, and they thought the technology had come from the Middle East, like Syria, but probably it was a bishop or a pope that was making them and selling them to the Vikings who were fighting the church. When I read chainmail after having seen and partially slept through that,
I
thought, wow, that's
really interesting. Yeah. So if it comes out again, you'll have to
see
it,
because
I missed part
of it. It was kind of interesting. I just wonder why that's a moth, not like a Western
That's a good
question. Well, we've seen
that
all along, though, haven't we?
Don't
Western
churches look
like that, too?
Their
domes?
There
are
some domed Western
churches. Yeah. Yes, the Greek gods. The Hagia Sophia dome is just like that.
That church that's out by us, the Greek Orthodox church, has a dome like that.
And then if you toured that church like during the Greek festival, they'll talk about that story
as well.
Yeah. It's missing its crucifix above, or its emblem of Muslim religion.
Yeah, I think one thing you can say for sure is, as somebody said, he's standing for the church.
Yeah.
He's replacing the church. Right. That's for sure.
And he has a stylized cross.
Uh-huh.
Did he say anything about those names? I missed the victim.
No, go ahead.
I'm asking. Other than that, well, I'm just asking. I don't know.
Those must be the kingfisher wings. Those must be those kingfisher wings that Jung talks about Philemon having. I don't know if he's mentioned it yet, but in his biography he says that Philemon has kingfisher wings.
Yeah, because he dives down for wisdom, huh?
He dives into the water, I guess.
Yeah.
There's a synchronicity involved with it. Yeah.
Or does he even dream that Philemon has kingfisher wings and then finds the dead kingfisher?
Yeah,
or something
it's something like that. The memory strips and reflection. I can't remember the story, but yeah, he finds one that's spirit of rims. There are other kingfishers.
Back on 315, he says in the left column, last paragraph, he says to Philemon, I did not see that your heart is a temple and that you serve in the sanctuary. You have succeeded in uniting what has been centered.
Where is that?
It's on 315, the left hand paragraph. Left-hand column, the last paragraph, the first lines about the heart.
That really describes this.
Yeah, and that you succeeded in uniting what has been sundered, that is, finding together the above and the below.
Good point.
I found the thing.
Let's read it.
Okay. Here's his dream. There was a blue sky like the sea, covered not by clouds, but by flat brown clods of earth. It looked as if the clods were breaking apart and the blue water of the sea were coming, blue water of the sea were becoming visible between them. But the water was the blue sky. Suddenly there appeared to the right a winged being sailing across the sky. I saw that it was an old man with the horns of a bull. He held a bunch of four keys, one of which he clutched as if he were about to open a lock. He had the wings of a kingfisher with its characteristic colors.
since I did not understand this dream image, I painted it in order to express it upon my memory. During the days when I was occupied with the painting, I found in my garden by the lake shore a dead Fisher King. I was thunderstruck.
For you said Fisher King.
King
That's
Fisher. I know. Yeah, well.
Can't get away with anything.
My own psychology. Okay. I was struck, for kingfishers are quite rare in the vicinity of Zurich, and I have never since found a dead one. The body was recently dead, at the most 2 or 3 days, and showed no external injuries. Philemon and other figures of my fantasy brought home to me the crucial insight: there are things in the psyche which I do not produce, but which produce themselves and have their own life.
There it is.
What's that
for memories?
183. Memories, let me write that down. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff here. Why don't you give us some on again, please, if you would. And, so I wanted to refer to the footnote 282 to this image. Apparently he painted this in his bedroom in Bolivian. I've never been, but... then he added this, the inscription, defend from Hermes, describing the stone, the alchemical stone, as defend me and I will defend thee. Give me my right that I may help thee. So that this is an image of part of the alchemical process, is what I guess I'd say. And how central it is, and potentially distracting it can also be. Then, okay, then he's carrying a polished piece of steel, hardened in 10 fires, which I would take to mean the strength he's gleaned through this journey. You know, this thing has only been going on about 3 months. Well, maybe 6 months. 5 months. It's astounding to think he went through this in that amount of time. And kept eating 3 meals a day, raising kids.
Seeing clients.
What's that?
Dealing with a wife and a mistress. Even that would take a lot of time.
That would wear me out. I just don't. Well, there's a beautiful set of videos called, I forget what it's called, put out by the LA Jung Institute, where they went around probably 30 years now, and they interviewed all the living people that had worked with Jung at that time. And they interviewed Joseph Henderson. And he said, the guy said, what was Jung like? And he said, well, Jung was a man who really shouldn't have been, but he was. Mm-hmm. Meaning, how could he... the idea he's conveying is he was so much that amount of muchness shouldn't exist, but it did. He says it much better than I did. But. Yeah. And he says it with great affection. What's that series called? Remembering Jung. It's the LA Institute. I've got it if you want to borrow it. Maybe I should bring it in. Play that segment.
Well, Barbara Hannah, I think there's plenty of lot to go around.
I think it's that same series. I'm going to make my, let's take a break. I'll make myself a note, and maybe I'll just bring that little 10-minute segment next, or 1-minute segment next time. It's just a nice. Let's take a stretch.
He was the one that analyzed Tony and Emma together, wasn't he?
That was Meyer.
Oh, that was Meyer.
Okay. Wait, yeah, that was Meyer.
Okay. He analyzed them together, meaning at the same time?
Well, I mean...
Yeah, they went to somebody together to work on the
Meyer, C.A. Meyer, guy I worked with, he said that they would come in together and they would work on their relationship together with him.
Emma and Tony. Yeah. Well, didn't Jung and Emma and Tony try to sit down, the three of them, at one point?
Oh, they probably did everything. It is, you just think, oh my God, what chaos. But they didn't know. They didn't know what you could and couldn't do.